I will be at the river clearing my head or on a walk or with my family or whatever, and then a song shows up and I have to stop.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Ear Fuel Podcast. I am your host, Joel Freemark. You may know me as the Daily Guru. You may know me from my writing at Death and Taxes magazine, and you might not know me. And if you're one of those people, hey, guess what? You know me now. We're old friends. At the top, you heard a clip of my interview with Tim Berry that we're going to get to in a bit. It was a lot of fun, and I know you're going to dig it. But first up, there are a pair of new records that have come out recently that really need to be discussed. The first one I want to talk about is the Free Wheezy album from Lil Wayne. It came out about 2 weeks ago. First off, the fact that this album was released on Cash Money Records, it's both ironic and puzzling to me because Lil Wayne, if you didn't know, is currently suing Cash Money Records due to them continually delaying the Carter 5 record that people have been waiting on for years and years. So he finally got around to getting annoyed enough with them to press a lawsuit, and this album comes out instead. So yeah, the fact that this record came out instead, it makes me wonder whether or not the Carter 5 actually exists. I mean, maybe he can't release it because of the lawsuit. That may be part of it. Who knows? It seemed really odd. When I heard this was coming out, I was like, oh, he's going to, you know, throw down SoundCloud or something like that. But he put it out through the label, and he pushed it. So we know this isn't the label going behind his back. This is an official release. It just seems strange. The fact, though, that he calls it the Free Wheezy album and put it out by the label holding him captive. You cannot write that sort of irony. Anyway, though, on to the album itself, which clocks in at 16 tracks over an hour of music. That is extremely long in terms of hip-hop. And honestly, when you get that far out of the usual range, a lot of bad things can happen. But that's not necessarily the case here. So there's that touch of auto-tune that he pretty much always uses. If you know Lil Wayne, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't know Lil Wayne, you know what auto-tune is. And he doesn't use it to the point that someone like T-Pain does, but he uses it quite a bit and regularly throughout his songs. And I get that it's always his thing. It's his shtick almost. But even on this album, it manages to get nauseating at points. He uses it so much. I'd really just as soon hear him do a complete album without it. I don't think it really adds much to these songs. It's just, you know, it gets in the way for me. That being said, there's really no way around it. The first track, Glory, is pure fire. The lyrics hit hard as hell. They're so good. And it's just got this great sound in every way possible. Even for people who may not be familiar with Lil Wayne, if you're a hip-hop fan, this track may make you a fan. I'm not a huge fan of his, but I love this song because it's that good. In fact, I would say that the first five songs on this album are all pretty impressive. I Feel Good and London Roads are the two other highlights for me. And the way that he uses that James Brown sample on the song I Feel Good, I bet you can't figure out which song from James Brown he uses, right? He uses it so well, it makes it even cooler. And that alone, I think everyone needs to hear because it's really the artistry of using a sample correctly is on that song. And because of that, it really feels like a vintage hip-hop mixtape in a lot of ways. Those tracks, the first five, they're just quality. There's no way around it. But honestly, the record falls off so fast and so hard that I couldn't even endure the last two songs. It just got so repetitive and so boring. It was painful to listen to. The first 20 minutes of this album are great, but the remaining 40 plus aren't even worth mentioning. There are one or two decent lines here and there, but overall, it's really subpar. To me, if the first five tracks had been dropped as an EP, it would have been legendary. But the way that the album sits, because the bulk of it is so bad, it's a largely forgettable record. But I'll say this. If the Carter 5 is on the same level of these first few songs, it does stand a chance of living up to the hype, because the first few songs are so, so good. If not, well, not. And maybe, and I'm just speculating here, maybe this album is all of the other tracks that Cash Money Records had laying around from Lil Wayne, and they just said, hey, let's put them all out as an album, and we've got four or five really good ones, and then half a dozen that kind of suck. So maybe this is kind of one of those posthumous greatest hit releases that Death Row did after Tupac died, but, you know, right before Lil Wayne leaves Cash Money Records. Who knows? Go check out the first five songs in this album and then move on with your life, though. The other record I want to discuss is the new one from Veruca Salt. It's called Ghost Songs, and it's their first album with the original lineup of that band since 1997. The first single definitely had me interested. It had a great feel to it, and it was clear that this band absolutely still has it in terms of both musical chops and the chemistry between the four of them all these years later. The opening track, The Gospel According to Saint Me, it's fantastic. I love it. And it instantly announces that this band is back, and they are back big time. It really makes you excited for what's going to come up on the rest of the album. What you hear on this album in many ways is that Veruca Salt came out of a time capsule here. Really. The sounds are that vintage 90s alt rock, and their voices sound just as good as they did then, which it's really rare. When you take that long of a break, usually you can be like, oh, this, you know, they've aged. And you really don't get that in this album. I mean, if you're looking for that classic 90s alt rock sound, you're going to definitely find it in large amounts here. But at the same time, I have to question why there's really no feeling of musical evolution on this album. It doesn't feel like they've grown as musicians. They're just kind of going back and retreading the same ground that they did in the mid-90s. It's not always a bad thing, but it's definitely noticeable. It is clear that they love making music together, these four. And when they lock in, there is musical magic there. You cannot deny that. Songs like Sound of Leaving and Empty Bottle and a few others are very, very good. You can hear themselves enjoying themselves in the studio. And whenever you hear a band having fun recording, the songs are always better. That's true throughout all of music history. But there's a lot of music here on the album in general, and most of it is pretty forgettable. I mean, the band comes off as a bit of a one-trick pony, I guess. And there are many instances where it kind of sounds like they're just running the same idea out there again with slightly different chord variations. For me, there wasn't enough bite to these songs to really pull me in and hook me. And then there are some sonic experiments here, I guess, that they ultimately fail pretty bad. Tracks like Triage and Come Clean Dark Thing and most of the second half of this album, let's just say there are some very poor production choices here, and some of these songs, they're just not good. Kind of like with the Lil Wayne album, if you would have taken the great songs here, it would have made a fantastic EP, but all that extra stuff really drags the record down. There's no question these songs are going to explode live. Veruca Salt, to me, is still going to be one of the greatest live acts to see in 2015. They're on tour right now. But Ghost Notes, to me, is the perfect example of why when bands get to back together after a long time of being apart, they should make a couple EPs and build up to an album. Because when you make an album right out of the gates, you're kind of getting everything that they'd wanted to do all of those years, and some of it's going to be bad. So those are some new albums I wanted to shed some light on, and now we can dig into the meat of this week's podcast, the Tasty Center. The other week, Tim Barry was here in New York City. He played over at St. Vitus, which I forever love as a venue. It's one of my favorite places. I just wish it wasn't such a pain in the ass to get to Greenpoint. And he was kind enough when he was here to carve out some time to talk with me before the show. If you don't know Tim, he was the front man for the band Avail for, I think, like 20-some-odd years. And back in 2005, before Avail ended, he started releasing music as a solo performer. His solo stuff is what lots of people these days refer to as folk punk, and I'll let that go, even though, as far as I'm concerned, folk music is punk music, and punk music is basically folk. It's music of the people. It's the same thing. But anyway, we won't get caught up on that. Honestly, Tim is responsible for a number of my favorite albums from the past decade, at least three or four of them. I love his solo work. We really chatted about everything from how unique a music scene you have in Richmond, Virginia, to why there's one song he'll never play in front of an audience. My apologies for the slight background noise you're going to hear. It was hotter than hell down there at St. Vitus in the basement, and the air conditioning units were running. So it didn't impact the interview, but if you're sitting there saying to yourself, what's that noise in the background? It's the air conditioning units. It's the summer in New York City. Forgive us. So without further ado, Tim Barry here on the Ear Fuel Podcast.
I try not to suck at life in general. So the new album, that was really hot, so I'm going to turn me down. So the new album, what was your inspiration behind it?
Oh, I never have an inspiration. I never have an intention. I just write songs all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, all the time.
Sure.
And sometimes those songs become completed songs. And if I have a lot of completed songs that go in sequence well,
yeah,
I'll stop what I'm doing and record a record.
That's when you know it's done?
Yeah. And usually what I do is record maybe, you know, if I want the record to be, you know, around 35 minutes, I'll record 50 minutes worth of music and then sort of just sequence it so it's a way that I like listening to it from beginning to end, if that makes sense.
No, that,
and
that
then
makes...
So, yeah, there's never an intention. I don't have, like, a theme. I never have, like, a specific thing that I want to say or whatever. It's just how it is. It just comes, it's just complete and it's done. In this record, I think the only thing that was really different, well, there was many things that was different about it, like the recording process and other things. I usually, so I hear songs in colors. And so it's very specific, like, you know, each song has to have a different color. It's okay if you go back to certain colors throughout the record. But for some, and but for every record I've done, I've usually, like, as I'm collecting the songs and putting them together, I find a really strong title, and I can start seeing the color of the record cover and things like that. But this one was very different, where I finished the whole record and I had no record cover and I had no title. And it was kind of vexing. It was perplexing and is very uninteresting, really, in the grand scheme of things. But I was really thankful when it all came together in the end, because the record cover was sitting in front of me the whole time I was searching for it, as a photograph that one of my best friends, Chrissy Piper, a professional photographer in Los Angeles, took of my wife and my daughter when she visited one time, and it's sitting on our family piano. And I was like, this is a beautiful picture and is a very good theme to the record, which is slightly family-oriented. And the title Lost and Rootless came from one of the songs, and it's, I dislike the word, but it's a juxtapose. Because I am, and we are, inherently lost and rootless people, whether you have an anchor or you're tied down with a family, a wife, and a child or not. And I think it just came together really well, and that's when I started getting really excited about, well, this is done, and now I want to put it out.
Now you got it.
So it's I know it's in the grand scheme of things, it's not very interesting, but it was fun to make this record. It was different. I didn't go into a studio. I recorded it in our shed in our backyard. I built a little isolation booth out of pallets and dumpster carpet and whatnot, and freezing ass cold back there, and did it on my own time. You know, when I felt like recording, I would record. If it was going well, I'd stay in there as long as I could. If it wasn't, I could just go down to the river and do something else. So it was really, it was a fun, my favorite record to make, completely by myself in there, and then, you know, and then bringing in the other people to round it out, my sister and Josh Small. So
and everybody came out to the shed to record?
It was mixed, you know. There was different situations, because once everything was completed in the shed, it, of course, it had to go into the studio to do some of the overdubs and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it was mixed up, yeah. So there's a lot of live moments on there. A lot of fun.
Did you find yourself kind of sometimes at like 1 or 2 in the morning, just kind of, oh, I need to go out to the shed, I gotta get this out?
No, this is where you don't know me.
Okay.
I'm asleep by 9 every day. 1 or 2 in the afternoon,
sure.
Yes.
Sure.
No, I'm at home, I'm up with the sun and down with the sun. It's but no, there was definitely moments, not at 1 or 2 in the morning, but there's definitely moments where it was like there was an urgency to get down,
you gotta drop
to
everything.
Get into the shed. But that's how I write. Again, like, you know, constantly writing, I don't know why, and sometimes I think I just need to stop, because I will be at the river clearing my head or on a walk or with my family or whatever, and then a song shows up and I have to stop and do something.
So what you said is that this record kind of feels, you know, it's a little more about family and things like that. And I was thinking the same thing when you look at the progressions of some of your albums, you know, where Ravana Junction, it's a very lonely, desolate record to me. And 40 Miler was more upbeat and almost, I don't want to say fun, because I don't like calling people's music fun, but it was, you know, it was a lot lighter.
There's definitely songs that you can laugh with.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then this one, you know, there seems to be a very strong feeling of family running throughout, you know, Papa's Porch, All My Friends, stuff like that. Was there a mentality change while you were writing this?
No, I don't. Well, you know, I think you can't, you know, I've been writing songs my whole life, and some of them have become public. And I write by feel and what I know and what I see and what I listen to. And, so it's a progression of, my life changes constantly, sure. Like everyone. So I'm sure that some of that comes together. Also, like, you know, a lot of what's different about this record, and maybe more uplifting or not as sad or whatever, excuse me, is that it's really like very stripped down. And I think, like, because the focus becomes the vocals and the lyrics, because there's nothing else that really interferes with them, people are listening to the actual lyrics maybe more than on the records that have tons of instrumentation and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah, you get a more delicate feel on songs like The James. It's such a fragile song and so still, because it's just, you know, it's such a simple arrangement.
Yeah, I wrote that song a long time ago too, actually, a very long time ago. It's just two chords. I drop a third chord in there somewhere, but I have so much trouble talking about music because I don't think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's just a part of my life. It's like walking. It's just something I do. And, yeah, so, like, when we discuss music, when you and I talk about it, I don't really know what to say. Because, you know, when I get home from this tour, I'm going to be writing songs again, sure, like I am right now. And I don't even let people hear any of them, mostly, you know. And I would have written every single one of these songs, whether anybody heard them or not, anyway. And I might not even ever listen to them again. You just
got to get them out of your system.
Yeah.
Has that changed? Has your writing process changed since your children arrived? Other than maybe not having as much time to write?
No, it's opposite. So, you know, like the demos and my first album, Rivanna Junction, and all the way into 40 Miler, which was my whatever fourth record or whatever, I was working multiple jobs, like hustling, doing stagehand work, some points washing dishes, doing all kinds of work. So I actually didn't get much time to write songs. And my schedule was incredibly eclectic. I was also on the road in between those work schedules and stuff like that. And nowadays, I am actually living off of music. So I have so much time to write. I self-manage. Uh-huh. I do everything on my own.
Sure.
But when I'm at home, I work all morning getting ready for tours and doing all the stuff that most people don't know that we all do. And in the afternoons, I definitely get 4, 5, 6 days a week for a few hours just by myself working on songs. So I play music way more now than I ever have in my life. And I have more fun playing music now more than I ever have in my entire life. So having two children actually has not slowed me down in any way. We just have a schedule. I get up with them bright and early every morning and take care of them as much as I can. In the afternoons, I spend some time alone working on songs, and then we have supper and do our thing. And then, yeah, it's great. I feel blessed. I feel lucky as hell, you know?
So you prefer solo as opposed to band recordings?
No, that's always going to change, you know? God, who knows? My new songs are super folky and really quiet. But I was just out with Two Cow Garage, that band. They're one of my favorite rock bands. And I was like, man, we should do a record together. Let me write a record and y'all play. So who knows, you know? Like, but right now I'm having a lot of fun just, you know, I've been playing a guitar my whole life, but I've never been able to play it. And lately, with guidance from a lot of the people I tour with, just like watching them and studying, I'm like finally learning how to do some things that I've always wanted to do and learn to do. So a lot of my newer songs are very folky. A lot of finger picking and whatnot.
So with all you were saying about, you know, how you kind of self-manage and you handle everything, I know you do your own merch, the whole nine. I saw, you know, I know recently you've been kind of embracing technology a bit more.
I'm learning it.
Yeah. And you've been using Stage It a lot to do shows.
Oh, yeah, I started doing them, yeah.
What brought you to that as kind of an outlet?
Well, I was interested. I just love doing new things. In the same way that when I'm on tour, I don't like to play the same places. I like to switch it up and like inconsistency. My good friend, Jenny Owen Youngs, who lives here in Brooklyn, a musician, she did a Stage It show. And I was super excited about it. And my daughter, Leela, and I watched it. And it was really neat. So I hollered at her and said, how the heck does this work? And she taught me. And I signed up to do one. And if y'all have never seen it, Stage It Show is an online show. You pay what you want and you watch the performer play through your computer screen. And so I've done three of those now. I have another one lined up. In the first one, I got to tell you, I was so nervous. I didn't understand it. You know, it's like if you're doing something for the first time and, you know, with that one, there's 100 people watching from all over the world. It's like, I just don't even know how this works, you know. So it was really engaging. And now, you know, the last one I did was so much fun and I was so relaxed and I had such a great time. I'm doing another one soon. Yeah, that's funny you're bringing that up, the embracing technology. It's more like finding new ways to scare the living hell out of myself until it doesn't scare me anymore so I can find something else that scares the living hell out of me.
Just to keep finding it every time, something new.
I know that sounds absurd that I would be scared to play in front of a computer, but it's actually really weird.
It's totally different because you don't have the audience there with you. You can't really read what's going on.
So when you're playing a stage at show, on the right side of the screen, you can see people commenting while you're playing. And the very first thing I learned was to never look at them because it's like a 25-second delay. And so you can't really ask for a request because you'd have to sit there silently for 25 seconds before you'd seen one. So I just like get the requests and whatnot before I play, and I really avoid looking at the screen. And something that StageIt might have changed, or maybe I'm just so stuck on stupid I didn't realize it. You can't read the comments afterwards. So I had no idea what people were saying the first one. There's no way to look at the comments. And because we all need to satiate our egos, I'm like, well, what were all those things they were doing? I was like, what did it all say? And it was gone. I was like, did they all say it was horrible? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't even know. And so, yeah, it's a neat thing. Stage it.
Yeah,
but, you know, there's so many changes. Like, for me, it's not embracing technology, as you said, as much as it is, like, trying to keep up with as things change. You know, there's everything so new. Every week there's something brand new with technology. You know, reading the Wall Street Journal the other day, it's like, is it iTunes or Apple has a new format coming out, which will probably eliminate downloads.
Apple's got the new music store thing.
Which is really, 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 really bad for people like me who are paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God I have skills and I have trades that I can do, unlike some of my friends who only play music. You know, it's really hard to get side jobs when that's the only thing you do. But, you know, that stuff is kind of scary, but at the same time I always read up on it, not based on the importance of income, more like, is there something that I can engage in and be a participant in that might be interesting? Yeah, the online shows are one of them. Yeah, and then the changes and that Apple and everybody is presenting, that's really going to screw us up, like,
yeah,
us really hard work and like the people upstairs who are playing the show, all of the people that I tour with.
How
all
so?
Of my peers. I think it's going to eliminate downloads, and with that it eliminates the majority of our income.
Yeah, I mean that is kind of one of the big things over the last 5-6 years is where is the digital music balance? You know, I mean, I know that some companies, you know, when Jay-Z launched Tidal and he was like, hey, I'm all about the artists, like, yeah, you're kind of the same as everybody else. You know, when that came out, I said, if artists are looking for somewhere to just put their music up and sell it, you know, it already exists. It's Bandcamp or, you know, just literally DIY it on your own website.
Yep.
Do you see the impact of streaming, you know, and you know, illegal downloading and stuff?
It's hard for me to... Well, first of all, there's so little money in the records to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just about getting the music out there. There's very little income. So to take that little bit of income is really messed up. And for me to compare it with anything is impossible because I was not paid for any of my records until I switched record labels to Chunksaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing to base it on. So all of the records that I did up until right before 40 Miler, I never received any money, so I have nothing to compare it to.
So it's almost like the industry has almost reversed itself to where it is all about touring and, you know, being a road warrior again. You're not making the big money off records where, you know, for better part of 3 decades, you know, it was all how many CDs can you sell? How many tapes can you sell? And now it's like, how good is your music? How good is your live show?
Yeah, yeah. And then you get to a person like me who's like, maybe not in the winter of my life with touring, but I'm definitely getting tired and my tours are getting shorter. So So I'm slowing down. It might be time to just get a job.
Wow. You know, speaking of you know, just kind of getting the job, the song on the album, Solid Gone, you know, just kind of taking that working man approach. You know, I know you visit that here and there throughout your albums. The first time I heard it, it really reminded me of Johnny 99 from Springsteen's Nebraska record.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of that. You know, trying to do the best I can and getting screwed because there's no, you know, kind of getting screwed by America almost.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, is that kind of everything you're seeing around you? Do you know that person or?
Well, there's layers to that song.
Mm-hmm.
That song is just based. There's a lot of layers to that song that people might realize later. Maybe my kids will hear it and be like, it's absurd that if you had an ounce of marijuana and a firearm that you would do a mandatory 5 years in prison in the state of Virginia.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's actually essentially what that song's about.
Uh-huh.
Because where we live, many people have firearms. It's a part of the culture. And many of those firearms are willed or passed down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a part of contemporary American culture for people to smoke marijuana. And to receive a 5-year prison sentence for having a legal firearm and possession of marijuana is crazy.
That's increasingly becoming legal itself.
Exactly. And so, I don't know, it's not just about that, but that's just one of the layers of the uh-huh. songs. You know, there's the state streets where we live, and those are true stories, man. I said it on stage the other night. It's like, you know, some people hear this song as a story song, and some people hear this song as their real life.
Yeah.
And, you know, my crowd is very eclectic economically, and the demographic of people is very mixed up, and, you know, so there's many people who understand that song from a very personal perspective, and that saddens me, but I know people who understand that from a real life perspective too. So
it's also a weird
song.
Punk rock.
It's a you know, again, I don't know where these songs come from. Sometimes there are actual events that, you know, that turn into studies in my head, and other times songs just come. And I've been toying with that melody since 2007,
mm-hmm.
and the lyrics never showed up until, yeah. you know, a year ago. And essentially the melody is a traditional, like, I think it's like a lot of people listen to it and they like, this sounds very familiar. It's actually a traditional. It's oh man, now the name of the song escapes me. It's a Cannonball Blues. A lot of people have done it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's a traditional melody. Boom, 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 boom,
sure.
boom, boom, boom. So I think that's why there's a familiarity to it. I think that's maybe another reason people are drawn to it. It's like a comfort food that they don't realize they've had before, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, you said earlier with the words that, you know, some songs people are never going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because they're too personal? There's too much of yourself there? Because, you know, even the stuff you release, a lot of it is really raw and unguarded.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is something else I said on stage the other night. It's like, especially my older songs, I didn't think anyone would ever hear them. So if they sound unguarded, very personal, it's because not all, but many of them, I actually am singing about my own life. And it's, again, I didn't think anyone would hear them. So, blah. That's my right. style. I guess it's just how I've always done it. But it is truth that many of my songs are in first person and have nothing to do with me. I've always said, like, some songs that people think are love songs are actually like political anthems, and some songs that are political anthems sound like love songs. So y'all got this all messed up. When I'm singing my songs, my eyes closed, please listen the way you want. But I might be thinking, if you see black, I might be seeing red.
Sure.
And if you're seeing blue, I might be seeing black. You know, like, it's all colors. It's different, you know. Again, if a song I write doesn't have a resonating color, I never record it and never play it even on my own again. And so all those songs, whatever the content of the lyrics, they're just resonating colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what it is.
So with stuff from kind of your past, if you will, that just kind of made it onto this record, is Knowing Such Things one of those? Because that's a pretty pointed lyric. Sounds almost cathartic.
Knowing Such Things... in the town. Knowing Such Things. Yeah, that's a really brutal song.
Yeah.
Knowing Such Things is a brutal song. It's very intentional. It's almost, it's intentional, but it was unintended. I didn't mean to write it, but it felt so damn good to get it off my chest, mm-hmm. that is actually 100% me yelling at the only person in my life that I dislike.
And it
feels
it.
So good.
And isn't that like,
that I'm afraid
point.
To play it live. And, you know, that's a great thing, man. I have been touring for over 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I have a lot of people in my life, and I've only met one person that I truly dislike. That is a damn good track
yeah,
record.
That's good.
And if I find relief in writing one song to get that off of my chest. I don't even play that song. I played that song at soundcheck last year every night, and I've never played it live because why bother? Why even bring it up? It's gone. It's done. That bad person is, it's like, it's almost like they're just gone to me now. And there's a lot of guilt in that too, because everyone is inherently good. So that person, even if we butted heads, might be still sure. a beautiful person to sure. other people. But yeah, I'm been and done. I'm done with that song. That's funny because when you said, it took me a second to even figure out which song you were talking about.
Don't play it. It's not there.
Yeah.
You got to dig back for it. So you kind of said, you know, you don't even listen to some of your songs. Is this an album you're going to kind of let go and move on, you know, once you're done with the shows?
No. I think I've told you this. When I finish mastering a record, I never listen to it again.
Yeah, right.
Rivanna Junction and Lost and Rootless, my first and my latest albums, are the only albums I've ever listened to. I actually like listening to both of them, which is very strange.
They're pretty distant on the spectrum from one another.
Yeah, they are. But it's like, I think it's maybe it's just like, this is how this started by accident. Mm-hmm. And this is where it ended up. And yeah, it's you know, I don't like to sit around and listen to myself, but you know, sometimes I'll be up in the shed and working on something. I'll be like, you know what? I gave my neighbor this record yesterday. I wonder what it sounds like to them. And I'll put it on and be like, wow, this is not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you should be proud, man. Like, all of this hard work, you should be proud instead of, like, always critical and always thinking you're not good at something. And the last time I listened to it, I actually was really happy. It was months ago, mm-hmm. and I probably won't listen to it for another year, but it was neat to listen to, like, wow, we did this in my shed. My sister, my buddy Josh, my friend Lance, who helps me. Like, we are not pros. We are just normal people who, like, put the time and effort into this. We're not professional musicians or engineers or, you know, like, you know, we're just people. It's really cool. Like, making a record is a lot of work, way more work than many people know, many people who don't make music know. So it's like graduating from school, you know. It's years of work.
And these are all basically people from the Richmond area.
Yeah.
So, you know, that has always been odd to me, that I've always felt that Richmond never really gets the credit for how important a music scene it's been over the last few decades. Do the musicians in that area kind of hang that as a chip on their shoulder?
No, I think we take pride in being a secret, because we don't want you to come to our city. We want to come to your city.
Sure.
And we want to be left the F alone.
Yeah.
Please stop moving to our beautiful city and overpopulating our river. We would like it for ourselves. If you want to hang out, we'll play at St. Vitus tonight in Brooklyn.
We'll come to your town.
We'll come to you. Please, Richmond is not a music mecca. No, but we're all friends, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm talking like, we're the guys in the 11-piece brass band are friends with the guys in the thrash band, who are friends with the guys in the salsa band.
Sure.
Who are friends with the folks in the go-go band. You know what I mean? Like, we are all friends.
Yeah, because you can see that.
I mean, if you study any Richmond music, everybody is on everybody's record. I sang on the last Municipal Waste record. Mm-hmm. The 11-piece brass band played on some of my records. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just how we do.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, when Dave Brockie passed away, like, mm-hmm. it was an entire city.
Yes,
was in mourning over
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
You just don't see that.
In politically, I mean, talking all the way up to the government.
Yeah.
To the universities, to not just the musicians and the artists and the counterculture. It affected and continues to affect the entire city.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a unique scene because of that it really, you're not going to see that in New York, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
With never thought about that.
You know,
you're right.
It's a very interesting music scene.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tragic. Tragic.
Yeah.
That was a bad week in Richmond because it wasn't the only thing that happened, you know. Bummer.
On a lighter note.
Yeah.
You know, what new bands are you into? You know, what new bands have really been doing it for you lately?
I don't listen to much music at home.
Uh-huh.
And our radio in my little work van is the worst sounding thing you've ever heard. Though all I've been listening to lately, and I've been listening to for many years, is The Hold Steady.
Uh-huh.
which is always my go-to. And I've been listening to a lot more mountain goats than I've ever listened to. Like, I've always loved them in passing. I remember the first time I heard Gonna Make It Through This Year, or whatever the title of the song is. I heard it when my wife's father passed away the first time. It was 8 or 9 years ago, but I've really not until the last like 6 months really started studying mountain goats. And it's, you know, that's what's been really stoking me out right now. And then of course Townes Van Zandt, which is pretty much all I've ever wanted to listen to. But mountain goats is my new study right now. But really, I mostly listen to like Chopin and Tchaikovsky and stuff like that. I know that sounds stupid, but you know how I said earlier how I'm always writing?
Yeah.
When I listen to songs with lyrics, I end up writing. So when I'm trying to clear my brain from that process, I listen to music without lyrics. So a lot of classical music without lyrical content. So not opera.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's and that's why I listen to a lot of piano and violin music. I'm not intellectual or academic, y'all. Just no. It's just it's a peaceful thing.
It just does the job. It does just does its job.
But I grew up in a house that we listened to folk music.
Uh-huh.
My mom listened to folk. My dad listened to classical. So I guess it's just comfort food.
It does the job. So you're on tour for a few weeks now. Mm-hmm. Then you're gonna go back home. You're gonna tour later in the year, next year.
I'm pretty much, so I started touring on Lost and Rootless in February, mm-hmm. and the way I've done it is 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and I'm at the end of that cycle, which was intended to stop halfway through the year, and what I'm doing is going into what's called a fly-in schedule. So when this finishes, I'll be doing sections of the country that I wasn't able to hit in blocks, so I'll go you know, like everything from Manchester, New Hampshire to Tempe to Denver to Fort Collins, Virginia Beach, festivals in Florida, shoot all over the place. So I'll go to a different schedule. And it's really weird because I'll be gone just as much and I'm doing so few shows because there's so much travel time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be nice to like get in a different routine. I was supposed to take all of July off and I come home from this tour. And then I go play the Dillinger 4 21-year anniversary mm-hmm. show with Against Me. And then I go and play this place called the Annandale Roadhouse. And then I come home, and I'm supposed to have the whole month off. But hell no, I got to come up to New York for a week. And then I got to go to, like, D.C., and then I got to do all this shit.
No breaks.
So
no breaks.
It's all right. It's no fishing for me.
Yeah.
So little time at home.
And where can everybody find, just keep up on all your tour dates?
They're on my website. And Travis Tom, my buddy who does my website, did that Bands in Town thing for me. So.
Okay, so it's timberryrva.com?
That's correct.
Make sure you follow it. Excellent.
Oh, man, it's so boring. Don't bother.
Well, they got to know where you're going. They got to know. You can just click in real quick, look at the dates, and then move on with the internet.
It's all over. I'm all over the place. But see, what it's posted is never all the confirmed. There's so much other crap coming. It's a never-ending cycle. Every day I try to get off the road. Yeah. Every day I retire. Every day I break up because I'll be more popular.
And on that note, Tim, thank you for making time. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too.
All right, let's go upstairs and have a show.
That sounds good.
My thanks again to Tim Berry for making time to sit down and chat with me, and to St. Vitus for letting us hang out down in their basement with those awesome air conditioning units. Tim, like he said, is on tour all summer and into the fall. Tim is always on tour, so make sure you follow him on Twitter at TimBerryRVA, and his website is TimBerryRVA.com. The man ships all of his own merch. When he does his stage at shows, you can see them all. So make sure you support Tim because he is everything right in the music world. Now, before we get out of here, I do have your weekly Ear Fuel homework assignment. Yes, this podcast comes with homework, and I will know if you didn't do it because I will be checking it next week. So don't cheat, because I'll know. The magic of the internet will let me know. My weekly homework is really all about returning to what for me is the core of music, and that's a conscious listening experience. These days, you have music as background, you know, you're driving, you're working out, you're at work, whatever. There's so many distractions around you, and your music is just kind of there. So the weekly music assignment is all about listening to music without distraction. I'm not saying you can't do it with your friends or your significant other or whoever, but put your phones away, put your laptop away, turn off the TV, you know, just sit down and enjoy listening to music.
So this week's music assignment is, you guessed it, go check out Tim Berry, and specifically his most recent album that came out last fall, Lost and Rootless. It's available anywhere you'd look for music, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. You can find it. It's there. I listed the record as one of my top 10 favorites of the year, and it's even getting better every time I listen to it. It is an absolutely fantastic record. If you're into any sort of music, you're going to like this album. If you enjoy the more upbeat, louder songs you hear when you're listening, then go check out Tim's 40 Miler record, because it speaks more to that side. If you're more kind of drawn to the darker, slower stuff, the Rivanna Junction record he put out a number of years ago is right up your alley. So listen to that. It's a good balance of everything he does, and make sure you support Tim. So really, that's the homework assignment. Less than an hour of your life, and I guarantee your life will be better for it. I guarantee it. Next week, we're going to hop into the listener mailbag and answer some big questions people have sent in. You can email me if you want at getearfuel@gmail.com and make sure you follow me on Twitter @getearfuel. So that's your weekly Ear Fuel. Share and enjoy.